Bitcoin fixes this is a common refrain among Bitcoiners, and you will often hear Bitcoiners talking about the idea that Bitcoin fixes just about everything. Our guest today believes that it can fix hell, and it does this by changing the way people think about their long-term planning about health and how they think about their bodies. And if you have understood a way to protect the value of your money into the distant future, you then might have enough time to think about how to properly protect your body. Caribou is a Canadian Bitcoiner, an expert in lower extremity health, and a trained physiotherapist. And he's joined us today for a conversation about the intersection of healthcare and Bitcoin and what it might mean for reimagining of the healthcare system from treatment of diseases and symptoms to prevention and a new way of thinking about healthcare. I'm Scott Dietels. I'm the CEO and founder of Block Rewards, and part of our mission in bringing Bitcoin to the workplace is helping people understand how it will help them. So if you're interested to learn something about how Bitcoin might change the way you think about your body and physical health over time, stick around. This one is a fascinating conversation. All right, welcome to another episode of the Block Reward Podcast. We're joined this week for a conversation about the intersection of Bitcoin and healthcare, and a special guest is Caribou. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Scott. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Right on. Maybe if we could just start the show with, for our listeners who may not be familiar with you, tell us a little bit about yourself and your Bitcoin journey.
Sure. So I'm a dad. I'm a Bitcoiner, and I sort of straddle the intersection of health and Bitcoin. My Bitcoin journey began in around 2015, 2016. I was a physiotherapist, and I had a patient that wouldn't stop talking about Bitcoin. I was seeing him for shoulder rehab. He was a software programmer and just kept going on about this Bitcoin thing. And at a certain point, I was like, well, I'm seeing this guy twice a week. To carry on a conversation, I should probably be literate to a certain extent and understand what this Bitcoin thing is. I bought a little bit and started learning about it. And I had a fascination from a pretty young age. My grandfather was a really big value investor. And so he kind of gave me the fundamentals of, you know, I started working really young, wasted all my money. My grandfather's like, listen, you got to understand how money works, how to put it in a place where it can grow, because time is your friend when you're a 15-year-old and you're making money. So I got really deep into value investing, read The Intelligent Investor by Benjamin Graham, started to understand, how do you actually determine the valuation of a company? And so in looking at the mechanics of that, I started to look at the stock market differently and being like, this doesn't make sense. And Bitcoin is starting to make a lot more sense now that I look at it. And from there, kind of had this under the radar curiosity about Bitcoin. Stopped working in a physio clinic because I got tired of treating people's symptoms. And instead, I wanted to just put out education for how people can take better care of themselves. Because it was this weird thing as a physio, people are coming to see you to get rid of pain. But when you actually understand that pain is not a bad thing, it becomes hard to just treat people's symptoms and not have them have any willingness to actually understand and address the root cause. So started putting education out online about feet, because I had a bunch of foot problems, didn't know how to fix them even after getting a master's degree in physical therapy, and started a foot health network called the Foot Collective. And that just kind of, you know, all along the way, kept getting more and more curious about Bitcoin. And then Bitcoin sort of started to take over my life and started to be something I wanted to spend more time in. And so now I'm more in the background with the specific health network, the Foot Collective that I founded. Still involved. I'm now their Bitcoin guy, and a shoe company in Canada I work with called Soul Freedom, I'm their Bitcoin guy as well. So I'm still kind of involved in that world. But, you know, being a dad now and just being fully immersed in Bitcoin is really me living my life to my highest potential. So that's where I am today.
That's awesome, man. I have a lot of different threads I want to come back to there. I talk a lot about this concept of how over a long enough time, Bitcoin sort of like will reprogram your ideas about everything. And it has this weird way of relating to anyone's sort of personal passions and pursuits. So, you know, yours with health is just such a great example of how these concepts have a monetary value and just a value for life. I'm interested to maybe just spend 2 minutes talking about the name Caribou, because before we started recording, you said, you know, this is the sort of something that you identify with and your life is trending towards this identity. So can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, Caribou is, well, the name Nobody Caribou, which is my Twitter handle, was actually my two initials, NC, plugged into a random word search. And what got spit out was Nobody and Caribou. So that's how I chose my Twitter name. It was a random word search with NC. And the term Caribou just kind of took on its own identity. I was involved with the Freedom Convoy, So more Bitcoiners became aware of me and the name Caribou just stuck. And so that's kind of like my not so secret now alter ego in the world of Bitcoin, and is actually an identity that I really like because it removes my name from the stuff I work on and makes it is a reminder for me to make it less about me and more about the work I do and how I'm helping people. So yeah, there just happens to be a B in Caribou. So that works out nice to put the Bitcoin B in there. And yeah, I'm running with it. I like it. I think it's cool to embody to some extent the notion of pseudonymity in the world of Bitcoin and the idea that privacy is something that we should all be more and more conscious of, especially as Bitcoiners. But I think as anyone living in a digital world, the option to disclose as much about your life as you choose to disclose, I think is something that is going to be more and more relevant as the digital world and the overlords of the previous legacy world try and, you know, capture us more and more. And so keeping our lives private online, I think is good to set the example. So that's kind of, you know, any of the clients I work with regarding Bitcoin or wealth consulting, they'll sometimes ask about Caribou. And I just kind of, it's a good opportunity to share. Like, yeah, it's good to be private online because you never know who's watching and you never know when it can come bite you in the ass. And it's good as just a safety precaution. If you have a family, if you have anything that's in the public domain, adopting a pseudonym is just par for the course of being a Bitcoiner and going down the Bitcoin rabbit hole of increasing our digital online security.
I love the term previous legacy regime, or I might have not got that exactly right. I'll come back to it in the rewatch. This might be reaching a little bit, but is there anything related to kind of like the Caribou animal or the traits? Is this something that you, does it extend that far, or is it, it's no?
No, it was a random word search. I like the word though, and I like nature. So the fact that it spat out, the nobody one was like, it's kind of weird, but I guess it's a reminder to myself that really in the grand scheme of things and in the world of Bitcoin, I'm a nobody. So it's a good ego, you know, calibrator, let's say. But I think even though there wasn't any story behind Caribou when it first came into being, I think now I'm trying to embody the spirit animal of Caribou now. So
I'm into spirit animals. I think it's cool. It's an interesting, and the animal itself is like, it's a powerful animal for sure. So you were talking about, you know, the history and value investing, and, you know, Bitcoin really is sort of the ultimate tool for thinking about preserving wealth and planning for the future, changing your ability to plan for the future. What was it as you were interacting with this patient and studying, like, do you remember how the light bulb kind of came on for you, and how was it then that it sort of started to leak into your ideas about the long-term planning of thinking about your body?
I'm just a very curious person by my nature. And so Bitcoin was like the never-ending rabbit hole of Bitcoin captured my curiosity and actually protected me from going into the world of altcoins, which I'm very grateful for, because there was never actually enough time in a day for me to learn everything I wanted to learn about Bitcoin. And so I just focused all my energy there. And then at a certain point, I realized actually that's the only one worth learning about anyway. So I'm glad that that's the path I took. Probably about 3 or 4 years ago, I kind of had so initially it was just a curiosity. It was a different lens, a different way to view money. In the early days, I just consumed everything from Andreas Antonopoulos, the Internet of Money, part 1, 2, and 3. I bought them all and I read them every year, once a year at least, as just a refresher to be like, you know, to reinvigorate my conviction that this was the right decision for me to, you know, put more and more of my life's wealth, basically, which wasn't much, but was, you know, something I wanted to be very careful with, into Bitcoin. And so once in a while, I would get these periods of anxiousness where I was like, am I actually making the right choice? Is this thing actually what I think it is? And so that would be a forcing function to me to just double down on doing like a hard week of study of like 1 or 2 hours a day listening to podcasts when there weren't very many podcasts, or just reading books that I had good resources. And I think about 3 or 4 years ago, it really smacked me up. Actually, I remember this date, December 21st, 2021. I was literally in my car writing some notes and I realized like everything, if everything is downstream of money, then health must also be downstream of money. And it sort of started me down this path of thinking to think, okay, health requires time. It requires time to understand how to take care of ourselves, and also requires time to make behavior changes to take better care of ourselves. So if health requires time and money is the tool we use to store our time, if everyone is using money that's stealing their time, they're never going to have time to take care of themselves. So this was like this, like, I wonder if that's true. And then I started asking people, you know, that would come to me for help with their health. What do you think is stopping you from taking better care of yourself? Like, is it that you don't know how to take care of yourself? Is it a knowledge problem? Or is there some obstacle that I'm not aware of that's stopping you? And what most people would say is, I just don't have time. I don't have time. I don't have time to take care of myself. I don't have time to look into how to take care of myself. I don't have time to do the things I know I need to be doing. And so my question was, wow, everyone's so short on time. Maybe this is related to the fact that everyone's using money that's gradually, but in an accelerating way, stealing their time. And so I kind of created this framework in my brain. I called it the layer cake, where there's four layers. At the top, you have health. And this can be the health of the individual, but it can also be the health of like the environment as a whole. I'm not going to say the health of the planet, but the health of our environment and the health of the individual are deeply related, but they're like the most superficial layer. And this layer cake is hierarchical, meaning that the bottom is what influences every layer above it. So you have health, then you have education. And I think health is fundamentally an education problem, because if people don't know how to take care of themselves, they'll never be able to. And underneath education, you have politics, because the politicians determine what most people learn in their formal education. And then underneath politics, you have money. And this layer cake is hierarchical. And if the money is screwed, if the money is corrupt, every layer from there is going to take a beating, is going to be corrupted in some way. And I'm here trying to help people learn how to take care of their health when it's an education problem based on a political problem, and at the root cause, it's money. And so all this work I was doing to try and solve the health problem by putting out education, by working with patients, one-on-one with people, I just kind of realized like I'm actually taking the wrong approach to this. Because if I help people understand money and find a better tool to store their time, they will all of a sudden have a surplus of time available to learn how to be healthy. And if I help them try and understand health or try and get healthy, but their money is constantly stealing their time, they're never going to have the time to actually do these things. So yeah, December 2021 was when I really realized if I want to actually multiply my energy and have leverage to solve this health problem, I need to put more energy into promoting sound money. I actually have to do financial education first before health education can be a thing. And that's when I just started having more conversations with people about money, not even about Bitcoin. It was more, you know, what is good money? What is bad money? What money are you choosing to save your time? That was a question I started to ask people, and they kind of look at me weird, like, well, what do you mean? Like, I just save my money in real estate or the stock market. And they never really thought that if their unit of account is a fiat money that's constantly being debased, it doesn't matter what vehicle they're using to save their time. If the fiat's being debased, everything they're saving in, if it's a house or if it's the stocks or equities, which make no sense through a Bitcoin lens anymore, it's all getting kind of stolen from them gradually. Just slow enough that they don't really clue into it. And the tricky part about fiat is it makes you feel like you're getting rich. Like, my parents think their houses are getting more valuable every year. That's the illusion, right? The illusion of fiat is just so powerful, and it hypnotizes people, especially if that's the only world they've ever existed in. So yeah, that was when it clicked. December 21, I was like, I'm trying to solve the health problem from the wrong perspective. I'm trying to tackle the superficial layer when the actual deepest layer that I can have the biggest impact in helping people is actually helping them understand money, because then that allows them to lower their time preference in life in general. And I think health is a low time preference endeavor. And if the lens through which you view the world is high time preference, then you're never actually going to have an opportunity to meaningfully improve your health. You're just going to be chasing away the pain constantly. That was a long-winded answer, but that was kind of how I came to that conclusion.
We love long-winded answers on the Block Reward. I enjoyed that immensely. It reminds me of a couple of weeks ago, we had Daz Bay on the show, and he was talking about how ridiculous it is that an electrician should know how to do a discounted cash flow analysis on an equity. And it's like, this is how absurd it has gotten with the complicated nature of things that emerge out of really broken money, and people just, you know, using basic ingenuity to figure out a way to survive. As you were talking about, I was thinking about, there's almost also this sort of nihilism that comes with, on some level, nobody being able to store their time effectively. And I wonder if that contributes to the reverse side of people making poor health decisions, sort of low, high time preference health choices, smoking cigarettes, eating shit food, all these things that are like, it's almost like, you know, we know on some level this, every part of our society is disposable and fast food culture. And, you know, it's that part of like the fiat hypnosis that maybe infiltrates how we make decisions about everything.
Yeah. Sid Dean had a good quote in one of the Bitcoin Times magazines where he said, the hardness of the money you use is the toggle of your time preference. And I totally agree with what you just said, where if you don't really have, if you're not able to adopt a long time horizon to look into the distant future and have something worth living for, and knowing that that is, I'm going to be around for that. I'm going to have the means to live well in that future. Therefore, I have a reason to take care of myself. I have a reason to forfeit the cookie today to be healthier tomorrow, because tomorrow is actually really bright and exciting and awesome. And the flip side of that is if it's shit right now and there's no hope for it to get better, then I can assume the future will be shittier. And so why would I sacrifice getting something today for a future that isn't guaranteed and might not be very good? And so I empathize with the people who have this deeply rooted fiat lens and why they might adopt high time preference behaviors. And that's the battle, right? It's like in a world underlined by fiat money, which innately carries a high time preference mindset and lens, trying to be healthy in a high time preference world is like constantly trying to swim upstream, constantly. At a certain point, you get fatigued, you get decision fatigue, where you make a certain amount of sacrifices, but you hit your limit and just, well, I'm going to default to, I want to feel good, right? I'm just going to default to what makes me feel good because this is miserable and it's hard. What I tell people is it's almost like switching the direction of the stream when you adopt Bitcoin, because when you have low time preference thinking and you have time available to actually think about what matters in my life. What do I actually value? Do my behaviors and where I spend my money, more importantly, actually align and reflect with the values that I claim to hold? And by adopting sound money, hard money, and switching to low time preference, instead of swimming upstream, the current has been switched. And now all you have to do is chill and float downstream and just trust that, like, the time is now your friend. Time is no longer scarce. If you store your time in a form of money that preserves it relative to everything else, you are gaining momentum and you're gaining time. You're literally, it's such a trip, Scott, because I've learned that time is a very slippery thing. You know, I've gone through times in my life where I've lived a year and a month, and times where I go through a year and it feels like it was in a blink of an eye. Feels like it was a week. And what I've learned is the more I pay attention and the more I'm present, the longer time I feel I have, right? I just had a little baby daughter. Everyone says, oh, you know, appreciate it while it's there because it goes so fast. And what I've learned in my life as a parent is that the more present I am and the more time I spend with my daughter, the slower it goes. And so time is moving very slow for me now. Even though in the Bitcoin world, shit goes real fast, it's still the kind of thing where if I'm not having to use any brain cycles to think of discounting cash flows, to think of what am I investing in? How are my investments doing? What is the interest rate going to do in terms of obliterating or improving my wealth? I don't have to think of any of that. And I think to bring it back to health, I think in the same way that Bitcoin obsoletes a lot of fiat finance complexity, so that the electrician just has to think of, well, I saved my money. You know, it's like 101. My 6-year-old nephew can understand this. Earn more than you spend and save the difference in hard money. That's it. Finance 101, something I never learned. I wish I would have learned. And that's all you need to know. But in the world of fiat complexity, it's overwhelming to the point where you have to offshore the responsibility of your finances to the quote unquote expert who has mastered being able to navigate all this complexity, which we just accept as something that is just a fact. Like, it's just there. That's just how it is. When in reality, when we take a bit of responsibility for understanding money, all of a sudden, all that complexity literally just goes away. It's no longer relevant. It's no longer something you have to allocate energy towards. And I think in the world of health, you know, open source health protocols and just taking responsibility for understanding how to be a healthy person, which is incredibly simple, obsoletes most of the disease care and medical complexity that we've been forced to offshore to the quote unquote expert who are great at treating symptoms, but aren't trained to help us be healthy, aren't trained to help us understand how do I just align the way I live my life with my biology so that I don't have to constantly be worrying about treatments or learning about all this complex bullshit. It's incredibly simple. And so the biggest thing I work on now is just open source health protocols, simplifying health for people to make it understandable by the average person so that we don't need third party intermediary health experts or disease care experts, as they call them, which I think is a better reflection of what they do, to translate the world of biology for us. Because it turns out there's risk to that, right? What if the people you trust with your health are those who profit from your disease? That's not good. That's not a good incentive alignment. But it takes time to get to that conclusion, right? It requires some self-reflection and just time to study up on these things, to learn about health, to find the right resources that can empower you with an understanding where you're like, oh, I actually understand food, Right? I don't have to worry about nutrition or diets or any of that bullshit. I just have to eat real food that comes from nature that's grown naturally. And with that new set of simple constraints, I can actually navigate my world of food and feel empowered that I can make good choices over time. And that just makes it more efficient, right? You can spend more time living and appreciating life instead of always trying to learn and understand all this complex bullshit that actually gets obsoleted when you understand the fundamentals of health. Just like all the complexity of fiat gets obsoleted when you understand money from first principles.
Yeah, it's such a great analogy. You know, this idea of just having enough time to slow down and think about how simple some of these solutions really should be. And I love the subject of food because, you know, the less time we have, the less time we think about, you know, making good food takes time. Like if you're constantly trying to shop so that you have fresh produce in your fridge, so that it's ready, so that you then have enough time to think about a good recipe and make the food. And the less time you have, the more likely you are to get fast food and faster and faster. And food is so fiat, not just in the amount of time that we have to dedicate towards feeding ourselves properly, but in the progressive erosion of the quality of the ingredients, of the stuff that we're actually putting in our bodies. And like, it is so vital for how we, you know, if you're fueling your body with crap, it's a system, right? You're going to see huge outcomes as a result of what you're ingesting.
I totally agree. And sometimes I try and bring it back to a simplistic metaphor, not perfect, but to a vehicle. Like we're born with these F1 caliber, extremely high tech vehicles. It's given to us. Our job is to just care for them, right? And if you put gunk into an F1 car, it's not going to work. It's not going to work very well. It's going to constantly break down. The engine's going to need to be replaced. It's just not going to work very well. But it's not a problem with the car, right? It's a problem with just putting the wrong fuel in for this high performance, adaptive, self-repairing, alien tech machine that you were given. And it's like you just put shit in the gas tank because you've never learned how to put good fuel in there that actually maintains and aligns with how the engine's supposed to work. And it really is a shame that the education system could be such a powerful tool to enhance health. It really could be. And, you know, it actually would correct a lot of the problem with adults too, because if you teach kids the fundamentals of health and you allow them to learn about health experientially by growing some food, by moving and playing together, by just understanding what goes into like a good night's sleep and sharing stories about how they're sleeping and how they feel, they can teach the parent, right? And so the education system is just such an opportunity, but it is anything trusted to have the state handle is just going to be handled poorly, like anything, right? The state is simply not incentivized in a fiat world to help create a healthy population, because a sick population is much easier to manipulate and control. So I don't actually look to the people, whether they're good or bad or have good intentions. Like, I don't care about that. Because at the end of the day, we default to our incentives. What are the incentives in the world of fiat? Is to create a needy, vulnerable population so that continuing to crawl into more power is easier by the state. And so I think this is where Bitcoiners are just going to start to solve a lot of these problems through private education, for example. Small schools that do education the right way, where kids don't have to sit down all day, right? Sitting in a chair is totally unnatural. And the extra sad part is that when a kid reacts adversely to being put in a silly, unnatural, uncomfortable environment, they get labeled as sick and given drugs to tame down their natural instinct. And it's just so, I think we have to get this far off in order to actually recognize how fucked up things have gotten, to bring us back to the natural state of really understanding, like, what is learning? How do kids learn? What is the optimal way for a kid to learn? And I can't remember who said this. I think it was a yogi that I had listened to at one point, where he said, in India, until a kid's 12, they eat good food, they get good sleep, and they're outside playing all day in nature. That's all they need. What else do they need? They don't need anything else. They don't really need to learn high-level math until they're 12. They don't really need to learn all these esoteric bullshit things that aren't valuable to humans in society. They just need to be healthy. They need to play together, maybe given some guidance on how to eat, how to sleep, and how money works. Because the two things you cannot opt out of as a human are money and health. And the two things we learn nothing about in any schooling that I'm aware of is money and health. And so clearly the people making decisions about what we learn are just not competent they're just not competent enough to be making those decisions. So how do we, you know, it's a big problem, but it's also a giant opportunity. I'm really bullish on a generation of Bitcoiners who are going to lead the next iteration of civilization and bring it back to health and back to sound fundamental principles as a civilization to just be healthier, because I think health is the ultimate foundation for a functional civilization.
Yeah. I mean, modern public education is founded in one of the original fiat degenerate overlords, Mr. Rockefeller, who is also very intertwined with healthcare and the current, you know, all of these things really did come out of significant changes that were enacted kind of 100 years ago, or right around the time of the creation of the Fed, uncoincidentally. All of these things that we're really seeing, I don't know, play out to their natural endpoint happening right now. Yeah, we'll come back to this idea about open source. Bitcoiners changing the future non-democratically or ultra-democratically, however we want to phrase that. I wanted to ask you a little bit about your manifesto, your white paper, Lower Body Extremity Health. So to frame the conversation around empowering through education, maybe just tell us a little bit about it.
Sure. And actually, before I do, I have a question for you. I'd love to hear your thought on this. Is a question I love to ask everyone I interact with. How do you define health in one sentence? There's no wrong answer, and you reserve the right to change your mind in a second if you want. But I'm always curious, you know, back to that question that I said a lot of people come up to me and say, how do I improve my health? One of the first things I ask them is actually, how do you define health? And the irony is, everyone's coming to see me to achieve this thing, which is, you know, packed into the word health. When I ask them how they define health, they actually don't. They often haven't thought through how they define that word, which I find very interesting, because they're asking about how to get to a place and they've never defined that place. So they're probably not going to get there. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on just right now at this point in time, how does Scott Deedles define health in one sentence?
It's probably going to be three sentences, but I would say, I was a university level athlete. I've been training basically continuously as long as I can remember. And along the way of my own fitness journey, I have, you know, reading your manifesto was near and dear to me. I've broken both my ankles, tore my right MCL. My left labrum hip was completely annihilated about 4 years ago. Herniated two different discs in my back. So yeah, I'm like the person who was meant to read it. None of that is for lack of doing stuff. And in fact, is the other way. Like some of the fittest people often have the most tread on their tires, right? So my personal, how do I think about health? Today, I take my health very seriously because I am planning to be live as long as I can and be as active as I can later in life. So health for me is a continual lifelong effort to treat my body as though it's the most important possession I have.
That's a good one sentence answer. And one of the things I love most about that is actually process-based, not destination-based. Like the continual effort means it's not a... It doesn't stop. You don't get to like destination health. You're like, yeah, I'm done. It's like, no, it's the everyday process of, it's like mine is the process of learning how to take better care of myself in all domains. And it really is. I think if people tap into that, the best thing I like about process-oriented health definitions is that the minute you're embodying the process of health, like the minute you're, as soon as you decide to be 1% better every day, I consider you a healthy person. I don't care if you're 300 pounds overweight, have knee pain everywhere, and feel miserable. If you are working every day to improve your state of health, then you're healthy. Versus someone who might look jacked, look fit, but is not doing anything to work on improving their overall health, I don't think that person's healthy, regardless of their current state. And so, yeah, I think it's a good conversation topic. It's a good question to ask people if ever the topic of health comes up. Because you really see a lot of richness and diversity of answers. And, you know, for example, someone who's been in pain for a long time, their definition of health might be, I just get out of pain. Like not have pain is my definition of health, which I think if you ask me is a pretty low bar. But in that context, I completely get it. Because when you're in pain, all you want to do is get out of pain. Yeah. So I want to spend my time working on open source, free open source health protocols. So, you know, in alignment with the Bitcoin philosophy of free open source software being the path forward, I wanted to take on the personal challenge of compiling everything I've learned in my past 8 years going super deep into lower extremity health into sort of like a dissertation. Like can I write a paper and model it after Satoshi's white paper of, you know, 12 sections, 9 pages? Can I cram everything I've ever learned and anything worthwhile sharing? Because most of what I learned is probably not worth sharing. But can I distill it down to fundamentals, put it into a white paper, and then build sort of like derivatives of that paper into, you know, whether it's best practices for health professionals or, you know, we're working on a little kid's book of teaching kids how to have a healthy lower body, because I talked to my nephew about this. And if he can understand it, then we can write something up for other, you know, 6 to 8 year olds, or like even I would say 4 to 8 year olds, to understand how to just take care of their lower bodies, because it's incredibly simple. And so the first health protocol is called Apollo, and the domain that it covers is the lower extremity. So everything from belly button down. So that includes hip, thigh, knee, ankle, foot. And it was really just an aspiration to simplify things, but also justify by first principles why it actually can be that simple, right? Like when if I go up to a health professional and I say, all you got to do is lower your time preference, reduce unnatural behaviors and add natural behaviors, they're going to be like, it's not that simple. It's like, I got to be able to articulate how that is the final destination and conclusion. And so the white paper was just an effort to really unpack as much as I could about why I've come to that conclusion, and then put it out into the world for it to be scrutinized and for it to be read, adopted, tested, peer validated. And so, yeah, the website is runningapollo.com. And the white paper's there. And then we're going to work on sort of different derivatives that bring the white paper into applications for health professionals, for individuals. And the effort there is, the value in that paper is not actually necessarily in what's included. It's in what was chosen to be excluded. Because the 99% of information out there is actually useless at best, confusing at worst, harmful at even worse. And so, to me, Apollo is just the 1% of the most relevant shit that I've picked up over my past 8 years of obsessively working on lower extremity health with people. And then just sharing the cheat codes so that anyone at any time can adopt that protocol. And I really just look at behaviors as software for humans, right? Like hardware software has been a great analogy that I've used in over the past years doing like seminars in person or, you know, podcasts or whatever it might be. It's like we have this hardware that is adaptive, heals itself and fixes itself literally, which is pretty crazy. I think we can often take for granted, and organizes itself perfectly based on the inputs provided to it. And we have this amazing hardware that's designed to last 100 years if it's treated properly. And then we're born with perfect software, right? We're born with this innate drive to move with variety, with load, to walk, to run, to jump, to play. And then over time, you know, modern fiat world has essentially layered on these viruses, right? Like this malware has basically been picked up. We wear shoes that fuck our feet up without really knowing that. We sit in chairs all day without realizing that that has a major movement consequence on the health of our joints and the health of our movement as a whole. And so really this is, I consider Apollo free open source health software where anyone can read that and have a new behavioral operating system that they can start to work to align with. And it has more to do with trimming away the things that cause the problems than actually adding more things, right? Like I've really realized that health is typically by subtraction. If we subtract away all the unnatural shit, that's actually most of the work, right? Sometimes you can adding a bit more natural stuff is good to give your body more inputs and to kind of recalibrate and restore itself back to default settings quicker. But at the end of the day, get rid of the things that cause your body problems. That can be the toxins, the shitty food, the technology that creates shitty sleep. With the lower extremity, it's really mostly unnatural shoes and excessive chair sitting. If you peel those things away and reduce them to the point where you almost eliminate them, your lower body is going to restore itself back to natural health, back to healthy, strong, resilient settings pretty quick. And the problem is most people, when they run into problems, go to an individual whose job it is to treat symptoms, which has nothing to do with health. I was one of those people. That's what I learned in physio school. I did a 2 years master's degree learning how to diagnose people with fancy words when they have problems, and then how to make money by providing a service of treating their symptoms to reduce their pain. I was not taught about root causes. I was not taught to help people improve their lifestyles to eliminate these problems. My job was to treat the problem. And my business incentives as a clinic owner was get people coming in a couple times a week, make them feel better. And that's how the business runs. And it's a really perverse incentive. And so I think the paradigm shift we have in money, going from centralized fiat money to decentralized hard money that is based on math and truth, the mirror of that in the world of health is actually going from centralized disease care, which has nothing to do with health and everything to do with treating symptoms of disease, to decentralized healthcare, where individuals are reclaiming more responsibility and the people that they go see aren't there to treat their symptoms. They're there to help them navigate open source health protocols, maybe translate the the protocols, the best practices, and to navigate the process of improving their health. And so it's this transition from disempowerment, where my health is someone else's job, and they know way more information than I can ever know, so I can't possibly know how to take care of myself. That's the old world. The new world is, it's health. My health is my responsibility, and I need to find people that actually have that mindset if I need help. And that was the goal with writing Apollo, is like, put this out there for the world, for anyone to see. And really, that protocol is super nerdy. The white paper is super deep. Probably very few people will ever read that. But I think the ones who do read it are the ones who are actually willing to embody and apply those principles and will get the most benefit. And I think over a long enough time period, if we can build consensus that as a large extremity health professional, whether you're a personal trainer, strength coach, physio, chiro, family doctor, orthopedic surgeon, you know, long list, the expectation is for you to have read this open source health protocol, critique it, give feedback, and apply it, because that is now the standard of care. The standard of care should be effective care, doing things that matter, instead of just providing symptom management and making money from that. And once this is in the public awareness, it can't really be unseen, right? If you read that as a health professional, you're like, I'm just going to go back to treating symptoms because that's what makes me money. When enough people find out about this, the social incentive is that no one's going to come see you when they realize that treating their symptoms is not the path forward. So it's kind of a bit of an abstract thing, free open source health software, but I think inspired by Bitcoin, I think that's actually the path forward. And it's basically written for the future, which is going to be filled with Bitcoiners who are already taking responsibility for their money, have more time to take responsibility for their health, and see through the bullshit of the fiat centralized medicine, and are willing to, you know, accept that there's a different approach. And that approach inevitably relies on them accepting more responsibility and onshoring more learning about how their body works so that they can make good choices every day.
You know, I think that you did such a good job there, perfectly capturing this concept of the intersection of health and Bitcoin. So people who are sort of wading into Bitcoin and trying to understand how could something like this possibly relate to topic X? And in this case, it's health. And that's just it, right? It's like, once you've understood a set of rules that is externally validatable by a group of people, and an idea that can be shared and understood, and it just makes sense, then that becomes a paradigm for you to think about how to make sense of all kinds of things. And then in that process, simultaneously see the absurdity of all the things that don't make sense. So, you know, like this is how it becomes. Of course, Bitcoiners are going to influence schools and healthcare and because it's about making sense of life sensibly. That's very cool. I want to ask you a little bit about, this is just more of a personal pet question, but in the white paper, you talk about barefoot movement, and maybe you can just your thoughts on the importance of getting out and getting your bare feet on the ground.
Yeah, I think, you know, Dr. Jack Cruz, a Bitcoiner, and he also straddles the world of health. I did a podcast with him a while ago, and he said something very profound. He said, nature is the world's decentralized health system. And when we disconnect from her, we get sick. And when we reconnect with her, we restore health. And so, you know, people have varying opinions about why go barefoot. You know, is it for grounding, to equalize the electrons from the planet to our bodies? Is it just to allow our feet to function like feet are supposed to function naturally? Because we would have been barefoot for way longer than we've ever been shod. And at the end of the day, my response is, it just allows you to connect deeper to the world around you. And do I think everyone needs to walk around barefoot every day, all day? No. Have I found immense benefit from spending way more time barefoot in my life? Yeah. I'm a bit of an extremist with it. I go barefoot in airports. I walk around barefoot where I live all the time. I rarely spend time in shoes, despite being a big part of a shoe company here in Canada, which sells natural shoes. Because my theory is, you know, the fundamental purpose of shoes is to protect our feet, right? Protect our shoes or clothing. They're just clothing that we put on our feet, which we ended up calling shoes. And their primary purpose is to protect our foot from the environment around us, right? The foot is an incredibly important sensor, I would say, on par to the eyes. The amount of sensory input that it's designed to receive based on how many sensory nerves it has in the plantar side of the foot is incredible. And, you know, sensors are important, right? If I'm using a chainsaw, I'm probably going to put protective eyeglasses on so that I protect my eyeballs, because they're important sensors. What I won't do is protect my eyeballs with a blindfold while using a chainsaw, because then my eyeballs don't work. And so I think we've just gotten really off course with footwear, where footwear started to be worn for fashion reasons, started to be worn for varying different reasons that had nothing to do with protecting the foot. And ironically, the very things we started wearing to protect our feet are now the primary thing that's damaging her, right? It would be like, oh, I'm going to protect my eyes when I'm using this chainsaw and putting opaque glasses on that have nails that stick into our eyeballs. So not only do our eyeballs not work, we actually damage our eyes. And to the average person, they'd be like, well, what? That's the stupidest thing ever. But that's what we're doing with shoes. Because when a shoe is stiff, when a shoe is pointed, when it's not foot-shaped, when it sticks a huge layer of cushioning between you and the ground, your foot can act like a sensor. You are disabling the natural stability of the foot by compressing the toes. You are immobilizing all 33 joints in each foot, so they can't move anymore. And therefore, your foot turns into this numb block that no longer is capable of acting like a foot. And when you think of building a house, one of the most important parts of building a house is actually paying attention to the footings and the foundation. Because if you skip over that part and don't really care about that, you build a great house. Well, if the foundation cracks and it's built like shit, then the whole house is going to fall. It doesn't matter how well built the upper part of the house is. The footing and the foundation is extremely important, solely because everything else rests upon. And it's how the feet are disproportionately important to everything else. But the reason I really focused and went super specialized in foot health for the past 8 years is because it was being completely ignored. And I saw this thing in clinic where everyone was coming in with foot pain. And when I actually understood from personal experience, I had messed up feet from wearing rugby cleats that were soccer cleats, and my feet just got obliterated. And I didn't even know how to fix them as a physio with a 2-year master's degree in physical therapy. I like was not prepared to even fix my own feet. And I was like, ooh, I feel like an imposter right now. So I went down my own journey, and it turns out it's incredibly simple. Stop wearing shoes that fuck your feet up and your feet function real well. And when I saw that, I was like, I got to tell other people about this because no one really seems to be picking this up. And there's billions of dollars in marketing budgets for footwear companies to try and convince us that you need the stiff shoe with cushioning. You need this, you need this, you need that. That's going to make you a better runner. And it was all bullshit. It's all fiat bullshit. And it turns out that going barefoot is great. I think everyone should do it. You can go step on grass once a day. I love that meme of the Bitcoin world. Go walk on grass. I think it's great. But when you do need to wear shoes that respect your feet. So Soul Freedom is a company in Canada that sells natural footwear. And the reason I helped start that is because no one in Canada could actually buy natural footwear, right? They had to get it from overseas. Really hard to buy shoes without trying them on. And there's all these customs and duties from the state. That is like a vestige of old times when Canada did make shoes. They don't make shoes anymore. So really, the government just makes shoes 20% more expensive for Canadians by not removing this legacy tax that just hasn't been revisited in another fiat, nonsensical, stupid thing. So is it good to go barefoot? Yes. Do you need to go barefoot all the time? No. Just make sure that you're wearing natural shoes. And at minimum, get rid of the unnatural shoes that are damaging your feet actively, because almost everyone is wearing them. And almost everyone who is wearing them doesn't know that it's actually damaging their feet. And no health professional, or very few health professionals, I should say, actually bring that up as something relevant to foot health. And ironically, the foot specialists in the legacy world are podiatrists. They actually recommend unnatural shoes as good for your feet. Again, a weird derivative of warped fiat incentives where truth just isn't getting any spotlight because all the business incentives are based on like literally treating symptoms. And so when you put people in shitty shoes, it's kind of like a forward insurance option to make sure that their feet break down so that your job is required in the future. Do I think that's what they're thinking? No, but the awareness just isn't there. And so respect your feet with good footwear and spend time barefoot. Like, it's not rocket science.
Yeah. And in your white paper, you quote the, I think it's Buffett talking about the relationship. Show me the outcome and show me the incentive and show me the outcome. Yeah. What's required for a shoe to constitute a natural shoe?
Yeah. So my favorite heuristic is the 5 F's. And if you look at the Apollo white paper, there's actually a footwear resource. And in that resource, this is all listed there. So the 5 F's, and they're hierarchical, meaning that the first one is most important. The last one is probably least important. The first F is foot shaped. So the foot naturally splays out, so the toes are the widest part of the foot in a natural foot. And so you want to make sure that the shoe you buy is actually shaped like a foot instead of shaped like a shoes that taper into a point are just not shaped like feet. It's like the opposite shape of a human foot. So foot shaped, it should be flat, both inner profile, meaning no external arch support, which is sold as a benefit, but actually is just a way to weaken the foot. And then a flat from heel to toe, meaning the heel is no higher than the toe. So foot shaped, flat, they should be flexible, should be able to take your shoe and bend it, twist it, fold it, manipulate it. It should be able to move freely against little resistance. And, I give people 33 reasons why a flexible shoe is good. And it's every single joint found in your foot. And each one has 6 degrees of freedom. Your feet are designed to move a huge amount. 25% of every bone in your whole body is in your feet, which is a crazy stat. So foot shape, flat, flexible. Feel, meaning try and go to as thin of a sole as possible so that your sensors can actually act like sensors. And then the last one is fixed, which is kind of an outlier, but it basically means if the shoe is not fixed to your foot, meaning no flip-flops, basically, then your foot mechanics can't actually align with natural foot mechanics, right? If the shoe is flipping and flopping around, you have to do stuff with your toes to stop the shoe from flying off, start the sandal from flying off, and that completely throws off the mechanics of the foot. So foot shape, flat, flexible, thin sole, and fixed to your foot. Those are sort of the principles that describe a natural shoe. If you live in Canada, the USA, Sole Freedom, solefreedom.ca, regardless whether you buy it from there or not, those are features a ton of brands, got a huge collection of over 100 pairs of shoes for kids and adults. So at least you get to see what brands, what styles are actually considered natural. And my goal with them, I'm their Bitcoin guy, and my goal is to make that the Bitcoiner's destination for footwear. And we plan to, they already have sats on their balance sheet. And so now the next step is accept sats as a method of payment so that we can exchange sats for shoes. So, that is like the need to know criteria for natural footwear. And I think it's also beneficial to look at it as a continuum. You have the most unnatural shoe, like a woman's stiletto on one side, super unnatural. The most natural is barefoot. Just shy of the most natural is a natural shoe. It's a continuum. If everyone just strives to go more towards the natural side every time they buy a new pair of shoes, I think that's a good way to transition from super cushioned, supportive, rigid shoes to a natural shoe. Because the reality is you need to recondition your feet, right? If you switch all your shoes overnight and you go, if you're a runner, you go from a heavily cushioned, supportive running shoe to a natural shoe, you're probably going to blast your body because you're going to move in a fundamentally different way and you need to give it time and be patient with it. So there is like an adaptation period that's required. But if we all move towards more natural shoes, we're just going to create a better foundation for our physical bodies.
Yeah, I have a pair of the Vibram five-toed shoes. And you can't just put those things on. I know because I did this. Put them on, went for a three-hour hike, and you're my shin muscles were just on fire for like a week. And I'm fit. But your foot moves so differently inside a shoe, inside a closed-toed shoe, and you see this after. Yeah. Painful lesson to learn.
It's like going to the gym, right? Like first time you go to the gym, you don't put three plates on the bench and try and bench press it. You kind of start with the bar, then you go 25 or whatever. And I think almost everyone learns that the hard way. I learned it the hard way with Vibrams too. I never run. I run to get somewhere fast and I play pickleball. So I run on the court, but I decided years ago, try a pair of Vibrams, got all excited, went for a 5K run and my calves were just obliterated because I was using my calves to run for the first time ever as shock absorbers. And so it wasn't a bad thing. It was just that I did too much too soon. Learned that lesson the hard way. Didn't have an injury, but definitely needed like a week to just let it settle. And you definitely learn pretty quick that you have muscles you didn't know you had or that hadn't been working by just going for a walk in natural shoes. And now what's interesting, the Foot Collective, one of the companies that I'm involved with, are starting to actually penetrate into the professional athlete space. So, NFL teams, NBA teams, professional football/soccer players, they're starting to work with these athletes because they're also just as uninformed as the average person. And so whether it's pro-level strength conditioning coaches or just pro-level athletes, what we're seeing is there's a huge amount of athleticism that can be unlocked through the feet. And there's also this giant benefit of performance, so just being better athletes, and also durability, being less likely to be injured. And for athletes, those are the two king metrics, right? They want to perform better. They want to be less susceptible to injury. And there's this giant unlock that happens when they just pay a bit more attention to their feet, train barefoot, wear natural shoes. And it'll be interesting to see how the injury stats year over year start to show that benefit once balance training and barefoot training has been incorporated. So it's cool. I think the next decade, we'll see a big ramp up in awareness around foot health and natural
shoes. Yeah, I think you can definitely see some of these ideas starting to penetrate into the way pro athletes train. There's a young basketball phenomenon, Victor Wembanyama. He's like, he's 7'4", 19-year-old who does a lot of barefoot training. And like for a person his size, it's really incredible what the training has been able, what he can do with his body. And you can sort of see how different these things are. You know, I joke about it now, but I grew up in Edmonton. And when I was a teenager, we used to think it was a feat of strength to be able to come out from the minus 40 degree weather and try to dunk a basketball without having stretched or warmed up at all. And these are the, you know, the evolution of ideas over time. Yeah, this is a really cool conversation. I am so interested in this particular overlap of Bitcoin and other things. For people who are interested to learn a little bit more, where would you recommend they start?
Depends on what they want to learn about. I mean, if they want to go real deep, runningapollo.com, the white paper is there. It's extremely nerdy and very deep. But if you want to read that, you can go there. Our Noster is also posted at runningapollo.com. And there we put kind of bite-sized nuggets into the Nostrosphere as like little notes. The Foot Collective is a really good point for people to start at. They got tons of podcasts. All their education is free on YouTube. They got some great stuff. So, I mean, frankly, for most people, when it comes to feet, the first step to take, no pun intended, is literally just stop wearing shoes that damage your feet. And if you need more information on finding out, you know, how they damage your feet or how to find natural shoes, then go down that road. But getting a first pair of natural shoes, going on more walks, and, you know, Soul Freedom has a really good selection and kind of really aligns with the Bitcoin philosophy in terms of how they go about doing business. And it's more of a health education company focused on feet than a shoe company. But the road to foot education, foot health education, inevitably leads to footwear. And, you know, they have Canada's widest selection of natural shoes. So getting into a good pair of shoes, spending a bit of time barefoot and going on more walks is literally a great starting point. And then from there, go wherever your curiosity takes you. I think balance training is very underrated, both from a neuroplasticity perspective of just being better at absorbing information. And this is like one of these side benefits of balance training that I never realized until fairly recently. Falling is a very salient piece of information for the human brain, right? If you're running from a predator or running to get food, falling can literally mean death. And so the brain actually picks up this primal instinct to pick up the falling data from your brain is very, very relevant. And when you're doing balance training, you're essentially constantly triggering that fall response. And so you're opening up all these neural pathways. And from what I've seen and from what the research says, you have way more neuroplasticity and ability to integrate information, even after a 5-minute session of training your balance, of challenging your single leg balance. And, you know, when it comes to resilience and injury prevention, 5 minutes of balance training per day can do wonders. If you're an athlete, you play a sport, or you just don't want to have, you know, messed up knees and ankles. So balance training, going barefoot, get into a pair of natural shoes. That's a really good start. And then, 1% better every day. Learn a bit more, try new things, go on longer hikes, longer walks. And don't underestimate the power of restoring healthy feet.
Yeah. And, you know, to a point you made earlier, I think like there's no point in having immortal money to last you well into the future if you're not going to have a body that you're going to be able to enjoy it with. So, yeah, these things are intimately connected and very much relevant to each other.
And I think Bitcoiners, not only do they have a great future to look forward to because of the value that their sats are going to accrue over time, they also have the time to take care of themselves. And they're also critical thinkers. Right. The whole thing with Apollo is this is free open source health software. Don't trust us. Run the software, validate yourself, critique it. You know, and with the metaphor of behaviors as software, hardware being the physical body, your body is your node. You choose what software you run. Run better software, have better health, literally. And, you know, we're starting with a lower extremity health protocol, but eventually we want to be able to branch into other protocols. Like having an free open source food protocol that is endorsed widely by a bunch of, you know, high level people who understand food, not nutrition. Nutrition is sort of the fiat derivative of confusion that food has ended up in, but really it's just about food. And so, yeah, the goal is to create a really good open source library of health protocols that can be adopted by families, right? By parents, by individuals, by health professionals, by schools, right? If we open source a lower extremity health protocol, all it takes is one really keen, potentially a Bitcoiner, phys ed teacher to read that, to apply it and to know, wow, it's actually incredibly simple. I'm going to teach my kids that they just have to have a long-term mindset, aka lower their time preference. They need to trim away the unnatural shit, like shoes, unnatural shoes, and lots of time spent sitting in chairs. And they need to add natural things like varied playful movement, walking, sitting on the ground instead of sitting on chairs. It really is, health really is incredibly simple, Scott. And I think my excitement with free open source health protocols is just to put truth out into the world available for anyone to adopt, to run on their own node, to run on their own body. And to me, that's exciting because I think in the world of the internet's a beautiful thing, but in the ocean of information where 99% of it is bullshit, it's people trying to sell you something with weird set of incentives, it's really hard to get truth to stick out. And so with open source health protocols, we're trying to just condense simple, truthful principles, right? Not prescriptive, not telling people what to do, just saying like, keep these principles in mind. And if you apply these in whatever way you want, you're going to have good outcomes if you're just patient, consistent, and just focus on doing a little bit better every day. And Bitcoiners can only make a difference in this world if we're also healthy. And so I think I'm very bullish on Bitcoiners changing the healthscape and actually creating a healthcare system. I don't think we have any healthcare systems right now. I think we have systems that take care of sick people and treat their symptoms, which has nothing to do with health. And so I think Bitcoiners are going to create healthcare systems, are going to propagate truthful health information. They already are, right? You see all these Bitcoiners like, get in the sun, go for walks, eat high quality meat. Like they're up and up on this shit because they get it and they're interested in taking care of themselves. So I'm really excited to have more conversations with Bitcoiners about health and just to have these open source health protocols be adopted widely, perhaps even eventually by nation states, right? Like if a whole country got a competent leader and they just said, we're going to revamp our education system and we need to actually integrate consensus-free open source health protocols into our education system full stack. That's a power move to create a healthy population and a resilient population and to deburden the medical system, which I think still has value, but it maybe needs to do 5% of what it's doing right now. And if people actually took care of themselves, we wouldn't be getting blasted in the disease care world where, you know, you wouldn't have to wait years to get a part replaced because the part would never need to be replaced in the first place. Right. And in the few cases that it did, they'd be able to get in a week. You know, we know this all too well in Canada. It's just we've by not ever teaching health, we've created a disease care system that is mostly underwater and inefficient. And that's sad. So I'm hoping this is like a resurgence of a health revolution where the individuals now take care of themselves and, you know, healthy people take care of their environment too. So I think if we help people individually be more healthy, then the environmental health issue solves itself. Healthy people take care of their home. Unhealthy people destroy their home because what is their worth? It's not worth making an effort to take care of where you live because it might not be around for long and you feel like shit. So nothing matters except, you know, you at that point in time. So yeah, lower time preference leads to better everything, including.
And one of the craziest aspects of fiat culture is that people have even started to think of their own body parts as replaceable. And it's just such a crazy place to have arrived at. Caribou, I really want to thank you for coming on and sharing some of your insights and ideas. This has been a fascinating conversation and myself, I've learned a lot just listening to you. So thank you for your time and your efforts out in the community spreading these ideas. And if you are listening and you made it all the way to the end, I also want to thank you for tuning in. Your attention is a currency as well. And I sure appreciate you tuning in. I hope to see you again next week.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
Right up.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Block Reward. We're trying to do something different here, creating accessible conversations meant for people who aren't obsessed with Bitcoin. If you found this episode informative and engaging, hit that subscribe button to make sure you stay updated with future episodes. Your feedback matters. We'd greatly appreciate it if you could take a moment to share your reviews and help us with our goal of creating Bitcoin content that is simple and easy to understand. Bitcoin has an important role to play in the future of finance. It will change the way we save, spend, and invest. Discover why Bitcoin offers a game-changing opportunity for forward-thinking employers by visiting blockrewards.ca. Block Rewards' mission is helping Canadian employers implement strategies for integrating Bitcoin into compensation and benefits. Supercharge your recruitment and retention strategies and help your team members plan for the rising cost of living by rewarding their work with the hardest money ever invented. Special thanks to our top sponsor, Paramount Employee Benefits Consulting, Canada's only Bitcoin-forward benefits and pension advisory. For more information, find them at paramountbenefits.ca. Big shout out to Podigy, our production team that makes all this possible, and VMX Escape for producing our music. Bitcoin is an expansive and dense topic many people walk away from early. To Bitcoin enthusiasts looking for that podcast they can share with friends, family, and colleagues, one they'll actually listen to, we hope that is us. The content of these conversations is meant to be provided for information purposes only. Nothing here is investment advice. Bitcoin is a big topic. Be sure to do your own research before making any personal financial decisions. Thanks for listening.